නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Dear Dhamma friends, we were discussing Pottapada Sutta. We spent one day on discussing this. Basically, this sutta is available in Digha Nikaya, the long discourses of the Buddha, and particularly there are 13 suttas. Those are categorized mainly under the morality part, section on the morality. And in this discourse, actually, Buddha begins the section or the discourse explaining in detail about the morality. Anyway, the discussion happened very beautifully, like one day Buddha went to Pottapada's place. Pottapada belongs to a wandering ascetics, so Paribrajaka, and they were dwelling at a particular place built by Queen Mallika. She is the queen to King Kosala. And so once Buddha reached there, Pottapada instructs his followers to be silent, and then Buddha approached them. And actually, those people, including Pottapada, were discussing something not much related to the Dhamma, so they are discussing various different topics. So once Buddha reached there, Buddha asked, "What are the topics or what are the discussions that you were involved with? What did you stop because of my arrival?" And then actually Pottapada mentioned, "It's not that important. You can get to know those facts even later." So anyway, there's an interesting incident happened during the recent, and there were people from different faiths come together at a debating hall, and they were discussing how sort of complete extinction of sanya perceptions are going to happen. So different people were giving their different opinions. And one were telling the perception is once perception is basically happening not due to various causes and conditions. It's completely kind of random, ad hoc. There is no causes, no reasons behind the occurring of that. So when it occurs to a person, then he is become conscious. When that perception is removed, he become unconscious. So basically, this is one view that they were discussing. And on the other hand, another person mentioned perception is oneself. When that is present, he is aware, conscious, and when that is not present, he is not aware. And another person mentioned that there are Brahmins, ascetics with great power, and they are the ones inserting consciousness to a person's mind. So when that is available, one become conscious, have the ability to perceive, and when that is not available, he become unconscious. And then another person mentioned there are very powerful deities available, and those deities actually are the ones governing this consciousness, the perceptions, and they are putting the perception into one's mind, and when it is present, one is conscious. And when it is not present, one is not conscious. So basically, these are the different views that different people have put forth. And at that time, Pottapada mentioned that he was thinking about the Buddha. So basically, even though he belonged to a different faith group, he had a good faith and fair appreciation towards Buddha, and therefore he was mentioning, "I was thinking at that time about you, Venerable Sir, and because you are very skilled in this kind of matters, and therefore you are supremely skilled in this area, so I was thinking about you. What would be the real answer?" So different people have given different ideas, different views, opinions, but what is your answer? How the extinction of perceptions happen? And then Buddha starts to preach the Dhamma, and there immediately he mentioned that the very first view. That is an entirely wrong view. That is, the perceptions happens without reason, without any cause. Is that is an entirely wrong view, because perceptions are happening due to causes, due to conditions, due to reasons. Therefore, it is a conditioned phenomena. There are reasons, there are causes for the perception to happen. Therefore, the very first view is an entirely wrong view. And then Buddha mentioned a very interesting point. Perceptions arise through training, and some perceptions sort of pass away due to training. So basically, the training is something Buddha given more emphasis. Because of training, certain unnecessary perceptions can be eliminated, and necessary or useful, beneficial perceptions can be delivered, can be developed. And gradual, it's a gradual process. And then Buddha start to explain how this training happens. So last time I discussed this from another perspective, that is the question, even though it puts forth like how one can sort of cease perception or kind of gradual extinction of consciousness or the perception. So in other terms, so Pottapada is asking another way, how one can eliminate mental proliferation. Actually, that we can think according to the Buddha's teaching, because Buddha has mentioned sanya nidana hipa pancha sangha, the sanya, the perceptions, various signs, marks. So they are the root cause of arising various thinking, and ultimately it will go into obsessive thinking, and ultimately to mental proliferation. So if one is able to gradually overcome various perceptions to which one may get deluded, in the other terms, we are able to overcome various mental proliferations. So therefore, in this sense, we can understand, so the approach Buddha is mentioning here, the path or methodology Buddha is mentioning here, not only overcome perceptions, elimination of unnecessary harmful perceptions, but also it helps to overcome mental proliferation, obsessive thinking or overthinking. Therefore, this is a very valid question and interesting answer Buddha is giving. And again, kind of a comprehensive answer. It is not just kind of a cognitive type of answer, but Buddha touches various areas when he is giving the answer. It's a kind of a complete answer, whole answer Buddha is giving. So as a result of that, Buddha discuss how a Buddha arises in the world, and how he proclaimed Dhamma, and someone is hearing that Dhamma, and now he wants to practice, and as a result of that, he come forward, he leave his house, his friends, his relatives, and become a monk. Now, basically, this sutta is talking to a group of ascetics, Brahmins, and whoever already have renunciated the lay life. So therefore, Buddha directly explains the complete rich morality part, not just the five precepts, but a very comprehensive account is given on the complete Upasampada Sila, we can say the high ordination, whatever the monks are following. So that is explained sort of briefly or to some extent. Now if I just summarize what we discussed last time on that Sila, so basically Buddha starts with the Panatipata Veramani, where one may abandon the taking of life, harming another person, and then again avoiding stealing, abandoning unchastity, abandoning false speech, become truthful, and abandoning malicious speech, one become more sort of promoting the unity, the peace, and again abandoning harsh speech, one becomes sort of talking which is pleasing to the ear, and then abandoning idle chatter, one becomes a person who is talking only the useful thing, beneficial thing. And again, when refining the teaching or when refining the Vinaya, so Buddha takes this morality to certain other aspects, like how one may maintain kind of a good relationship with the environment. So basically, the environment is very much the same thing that we are living, and we are part of environment. So forgetting that, if person is sort of damaging, harming, destroying the environment, polluting the environment, ultimately the human beings are the ones going to suffer. So basically damaging seeds, crops, and that kind of things are also avoided. So therefore that is mentioned as the next factor. And then sort of enjoyment, dancing, singing, watching movies, so that is also abandoned. And again, kind of adornments like garlands, perfumes, cosmetics, so those are also abandoned. And he doesn't involve in buying and selling, doesn't use money. So basically completely dependent on the generosity of the lay people. So this is a kind of a dependent life. So one is completely now dedicated towards the spirituality, and he is not very much into the material gain and the economical or financial kind of a gain. Rather, he is kind of a living a very innocent, dependent life. And then Buddha comes to the middle level of the morality, middle section. So there are some more refined aspects are explained. Basically, not destroying any roots, seeds, stems, or joints which have the capacity to germinate. So those are also avoided. And then doesn't get addicted to various food and drinks, clothing, carriages, beds, etc. So those are, we can call as sort of luxurious items, so that also being avoided. So very much like a kind of a system, Buddha is explaining how one's life become more simplified. Now, actually, when compared to the past, nowadays our lives are extremely complicated. But with Sila, so one is able to abandon so many other things and makes one's life a way of life, a kind of a very simple life. So basically, he has to look after himself. Doesn't need to look after any kind of his material wealth. He is homeless. So basically, this is a kind of a different style of life that Buddha is proclaiming here. And he doesn't go to this kind of areas where shows as dancing, singing, music, etc. And again, doesn't go to any war fairs or military reviews. This kind of military activities, he is not going to such areas, such places. And different kinds of games are also avoided. So here, kind of a collection of different games which were available during that time were mentioned. So that is also avoided. And then some luxurious items, furniture, say chairs, couches, adorned with animal figures, so those kind of decorated items are also avoided. And then self-adornment, very much like the applying of perfumes, massaging just to beautify oneself, bathing in scented water, so that kind of items are also avoided. And then unedifying conversations. Now we already discussed when Buddha approached Pottapada, that his group was involved with 32 kinds of unnecessary or unbeneficial type of talks. So here it is also again repeated. So Buddha mentioned the person who is with good morality does not involve with such kind of talking, chattering. So this comes under the sampappalapa, where unnecessary, unuseful kind of matters or subjects that one may be discussing. Actually, very much like these 32 subjects are what we discuss today. I mean, apart from the Dhamma teachings, Dhamma discussions, very much like what people are discussing is onto these 32 items. Maybe about the dangers, about the armies, about food and drinks, clothes, wars, speculations about the country and all sorts of things. So all comes under these 32 subjects. As I mentioned, this is very much focused for a ascetic group, a renunciated group, for monks. Therefore, so as lay people, you don't need to really sort of get disappointed on what you are talking. But anyway, we need to understand the monk's life is different from the lay life. Now, then Buddha goes on to explain about certain arguments that certain monks or certain Brahmins have. Now, again and again repeated that these Brahmins remain, getting supports from the lay people. And after having that support, what they do is completely disagreeable, not agreeable. So one thing he mentioned here is a kind of disputes among themselves. So arguing among themselves, mentioning that your doctrine is wrong, my doctrine is right, I am having the correct view, you don't have the correct view, and you mentioned something wrong, I mentioned something correct. So likewise, different kinds of arguments, debates can happen, and therefore Buddha mentioned the person who is really righteous, really moral, virtuous, he doesn't involve with that kind of arguments, debates, or kind of disputations. And then another area is where he doesn't become a kind of a person who is sort of taking messages from one person to another person, from one family to another family, from one group to another group. So he is not a messenger. So this is more we can think of, because this monk is more dependent on the Pindapatha, arms round. So he may be traveling long distance. So now, unlike today, on those days, if they have to pass a message, so they have to ask someone to deliver that message. The very primary methods were they are to communicate. So it is impossible to pass a message to WhatsApp or through SMS or any of those things, so those are not completely available. So you can imagine how people were communicating. So there were no newspapers, no internet, and no telephones. Nothing was there. So monks who are wandering can become a good way of communication. Because if you pass a message to this monk, so since he has come from long distance, probably he can consider delivering that message to another place. Probably he is aware of that particular place. So he can be a sort of mean of transferring messages. So Buddha mentioned here, he doesn't do it. So this monk doesn't undertake that kind of messages to transfer from one place to another place, to one family to another family, from one group to another group. So he is not a messenger. So that is being also avoided. And then certain kind of deceptions, condemnations, hinting, belittling, and that kind of things are also avoided. So he doesn't involve with that sort of things, maybe praising oneself and belittling another person. So that sort of talking is also avoided. And then it is coming to a large section of morality, Mahasila. So further explanations are there in another different kinds of aspects in the morality. So certain base arts are there. Now certain people do the palmistry, and using signs they do sort of predictions. They do analysis of dreams, they consider body marks and give certain predictions, and they do certain fire oblations. Basically different kinds of oblations are there, using rice powder, using rice husks. So likewise different points are mentioned. So you can imagine in the good old India, how Brahmins in their Brahmanical religion, different these kinds of oblations were sort of practiced. And Buddha mentioned, so this monk does not involve in any of those. And actually today also we can comparatively understand, so various rituals are there, and monks are not expected to do that kind of rituals. So, say for example, in Sri Lanka or in other countries, India, so certain other ascetics, so they become the kind of the middle person between the god and this typical human being. So, on behalf of the human beings, they do various kinds of rituals to satisfy or to get some benefit, favor from the god. So, monks are not on that category. So, Buddha completely denied that. So, those kinds of rituals are also abandoned. So, he doesn't have to do that. If he is doing that, it's entirely disagree with the Vinaya. And then, another different types of base arts are there. These are more into the economical parts, and where they are taking off various gems and finding out their values, different marks in that, and judging the values in the arrows, weapons, in women, certain men, certain boys. So likewise, so they are catching various marks available in there, and according to that, giving certain sort of predictions. Okay, this is going to happen, this is not going to happen, this is how your horoscope is like, this is how your destiny is like. So these kinds of predictions, so they can do. So that also avoided, basically. And certain other predictions, like how a country face kind of a calamity, how a country face maybe a progress, how long this progress will be available, how another country may invade this country, how another rivalry king approaches this country. So likewise, country related, government related, kings related, any kind of predictions. So that is also being avoided. So if one is doing it, so basically we can say it is not agreeable with the Vinaya. And another area is the predictions related to eclipse of the moon, and then the eclipse of the sun, the stars, their movements, whether the thundering happens, whether the rain happens, when the rain happens, when earthquakes happen, when thunder happens. So likewise, the what you call meteorology, related various climatic changes and all sorts of things, weather related aspects, so those predictions are also avoided. And here again, this very much similar thing, predicting about the good or bad rainfall, about good or bad harvest, about the security, about the dangers, about diseases. Now in today's terms, when this COVID pandemic going to end, when the Ukraine war going to end, so those kinds of things. So we can say, so such giving predictions are all have to be avoided. And other things like certain familial items, like how giving proper times, good times, auspicious time to get married, and maybe to get divorced, and then what else? How one may save money, and how the good or bad luck going to happen, and how to avoid the abortions, and how one may do use various spells to bind the tongue. So those kind of different kinds of rituals, and sort of we can see very very mean kind of arts, so that is also being avoided. And again, appeasing devas, redeeming vows to them, and when someone is about to build a house, looking and checking that ground, and giving certain auspicious times, and finding out auspicious marks, and if there are sort of bad marks, to remove them. So those kinds of items, and various rituals. When doing sacrifices, and another area is entirely on the giving medicine to lay people. Now, monks can involve, I mean, they are wrongly involved with these kinds of areas. So they give various predictions, they give various medicines to lay people. So basically, maybe pediatry, maybe surgeries, and maybe ointments, eye surgeries, ear surgeries, different kinds of nose medicine. So a huge list is there. So different kinds of medicines, whatever monks give to lay people, so that is Buddha mentioned, is not, I mean, it is basically not good, and it is out of the proper monk's subject. Now, certain other areas are also mentioned. I need to find out from other sutta, because this Pottapada Sutta only has repeated the same subjects. So let me take from another sutta what Buddha has further mentioned. So here mentioned, so this proper person, a good monk, whoever practicing the morality well, so he basically maintain good virtues, maintain good morality. And now Buddha, after explaining this morality part, now he is moving towards another area. So that other area very briefly mentioned in the Pottapada Sutta, so that's why I want to take it from another sutta. This is Samanyapala Sutta, the second sutta of long discourses of the Buddha. And here next subject is basically on guardian of the sense doors. So basically how one may have to guard the sense doors. So the first area is Patimokkha Sangvara Sanguta Viharati. Basically that means one is living according to the precepts what Buddha has mentioned, proclaimed. So that is morality part. And then in order to overcome those signs, those perceptions. So you can remember the very main question is how one may overcome these different kinds of perceptions, which we can know actually ultimately lead to mental proliferation. Now, the Buddha's recommendation is multifaceted, we can say. It is not a single direction, but Buddha is approaching the question from many directions. So one area is the morality, and living according to the moral precepts that mentioned by the Buddha, because he know what are the areas, those are prone to more thinking, those are prone to wrong thinking, those are prone to get various signs, so that various perceptions going to arise. So he is coming across of kind of a broader view of the proper morality. So therefore we have to look into that, we have to adhere to that, and try to restrain ourselves according to that. So that is related to the morality. Now he is talking another aspect of morality that is basically can be considered differently, separately, and that is the guarding of sense doors. Indriyasu guttadvarata. So even though we have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, so if we are sort of recklessly using them, carelessly using them, so basically it is not going to help us. It is true that we have maybe very healthy sense faculties, but we are the ones going to suffer if we misuse them, if we don't know the limit. So therefore, it is a very interesting point here, highlighted related to the restrainment of the sense faculties. Now, certain amount of restrainment is needed from that as well. So even though there are many movies available, in other terms, it is not appropriate to go one after the other, to watch so many movies, to listen so much of music, to adorn yourself using maybe various perfumes, or maybe going one hotel after the other, enjoying delicious food. or going through various tangibles, expecting happiness through that, and overthinking. So basically, the sense faculties are to be restrained. So here Buddha giving a kind of a comprehensive information here. When one is seeing a visible object with the eye, he does not grasp its major signs or secondary characteristics. Now, typically what happens is, when we see something, if it is beautiful, we look closely, we pay more attention and try to recognize more information because we are interested. And that is how our mind gets very much like too involved. So now we are welcoming it, we are involved in it, and we are adherent to it, we go into it. Abhinandati abhivadati ajyosaya tittati. So you become delighted with it. Abhinandati abhivadati, and you are welcoming it, and again thinking about it. Ajyosaya tittati, you go into it, you get entangled with it. Completely get deluded by that. So this is what typically people do. Whenever something beautiful happens, is encountered, has seen. Similarly, you can understand about the sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, thoughts. Now Buddha mentioned the opposite here. So don't do it. Basically, don't get those minor characteristics, small characteristics, which are promoting more thinking, more mental proliferation. And on the other hand, so since they are causing greed and sorrow, evil unskilled states, so and again may overwhelm the mind, and therefore one guards the eye, guards the ear, guards the nose, guards the tongue, guards the body, and guards the mind. So basically, guarding of senses, restraining one's senses, become another aspect. Actually, I can remember one very beautiful simile. Venerable Kadavadvaya Jinavansa Mahathero has highlighted. He is the founder of this forest tradition in Sri Lanka. Now, he mentioned, now suppose that there is a group of people traveling by a boat. Now they are in the mid of the river. Now they found a kind of a hole at the bottom, and now water start to come in through, it start to come in. Now one approach is, one can continuously throw away what is already available and what is at what completely now which has come already to the inside, so one can start putting it out. So that is one approach, but you are continuously allowing new water to come in. You haven't given any solution to that. But the proper solution is to avoid new water coming in. So there is a hole, and you have to find out a quick mechanism how to avoid further water coming in. So that is very important. So then probably you can empty what is available already, what has already come. So that can be done. But new water is not no more coming. So therefore, one important aspect is to avoid new water coming in further. Now, same thing is in ourselves. So our minds are already occupied. Our minds are already really overwhelmed by so much of information, so much of problems, so much of perceptions, so much of preconceived ideas. And our mind is overwhelmed with so much of signs, marks, etc. Fully filled. Now, if you are again and again further feeling it, again and again further taking more and more information inside, so you are never going to empty it. It's a kind of emptying the mind. It's a kind of restraining the mind, what is required. So you can't restrain it well if you are continuously allowing more to come in. So therefore, it is necessary to minimize what we are taking in. So that is why when we are practicing, we are going to a place which is more calming, more soothing, not agitating, so not sort of noisy. So if you are trying to meditate at a place which is more noisy and more with what you call various excitement, so it's very difficult. So that is why Buddha recommend, okay, you go to a tree root of a tree, and or you go to a forest. So likewise, the setting is very much like a soothing environment, calming environment. It does not agitate your mind. And you, on such environment, you basically has already available this sense refreshment, because there is nothing to entice the mind, nothing to agitate the mind. So when you are being with the environment, these trees, bushes, they are not agitating the mind. Rather, they calms the mind. So it has a kind of a healing effect. So therefore, here we need to understand, so even though we have healthy faculties, so if we are going to misuse them or overuse them, so we are the ones going to suffer. So therefore, a sense restrainment is therefore a very necessary part, and even the restrainment of the mind. How much are we involved with overthinking? Now, if you are practicing vipassana, so one important area is to minimize thinking. Minimize overthinking or minimize mental proliferation. So without papancha vupasama, without calming down mental proliferation, there is no going to be a progress in the vipassana practice. So one can't achieve a sort of inner peace if one is continuing with mental proliferation. So this again I'd like to highlight. So you can understand therefore one mechanism of overcoming mental proliferation is this sense restrainment. Because you need to find out the root. I mean, just dropping thoughts is not the point. Rather, we need to recognize how it is getting agitated, how the mind gets agitated, how it is being triggered. So these triggering factors we have to eliminate. So that is where the sense restrainment comes to a picture, where those faculties are to be fairly restrained, so otherwise we are never going to empty the mind. Now, then Buddha go to another area, so that is related to mindfulness. Ariyena sati sampajanyena samannagato. So basically, now after guarding the senses, now one is moving further to develop mindfulness, which leads to develop clear comprehension. Sati sampajanya. So first we may be establishing mindfulness using certain gross aspect of our experience. Later, using that, we are refining our mindfulness, and which leads to refine or develop the clear comprehension. Say for example, suppose you are doing walking meditation, and you are trying to establish mindfulness with some gross sensation, maybe hardness. So hardness become your primary object, and you are again and again trying to pay attention onto hardness because it is more easy to sense, easy to recognize. Now you are able to walk from this end to the other end mindfully, pay more attention to hardness. Now very much like mindfulness has to some extent developed, now without stopping there, we need to recognize other different aspects, not only hardness, maybe smoothness, maybe roughness, maybe softness, maybe heaviness, maybe lightness, heat, cold. So movements. So likewise, other areas are there for us to explore so that our clear comprehension become more and more developed. Now, in this area, Buddha highlights not only that, so trying to be mindful on daily activities. So, sati sampajanyena samannagato is certain suttas Buddha highlighted the mindfulness in daily activities. Now in this sutta also, Buddha highlights that, he mentioned, so when going forth, one has to be mindful. When going back, one has to be mindful. When looking ahead, one has to be mindful. When looking behind, one has to be mindful. So with respect to bending, stretching, one has to be mindful. And wearing the clothes, one has to be mindful. I mean, now this is relevant to monks, so when they are carrying the bowl, they have to be mindful. And while eating, while drinking, while chewing, swallowing, and then urinating, defecating, walking, standing, sitting, lying down, waking, speaking, and being silent. So all these different daily activities what we are involved with have to do mindfully. So you can understand how Buddha slowly takes us into the more refined aspects of our life. Now, basically avoided the very gross wrongdoings, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, taking intoxicants, and those kinds of things. So that is the gross level. And then he refined ourselves basically onto other areas which are inappropriate. So that is coming under the Majjhima Sila, Mahasila. So certain aspects that it is not appropriate for a monk or kind of ascetic to get involved with. So those kinds of wrongdoings, so Buddha completely avoided. Now after that, he's coming to a more refined aspect, so that is the sense restrainment. Now do some restrainment towards the senses. Don't try to use them even though you have them. So that is one area. And then now he's asking us to develop mindfulness. Not only in particular posture, but on all the postures, all the very different activities, try to be mindful. Now slowly, so this mindfulness helps us to develop clear awareness or clear comprehension. It is not kind of dry kind of mindfulness, but you are able to penetrate what is going on. And that is how one sense you are developing a continuous mindfulness, unbroken mindfulness. And on the other hand, you can refine your mindfulness and recognize subtle details. So those are, we can say, kind of two aspects. So have kind of overall mindfulness where mind is not much deluded by the past and the future, rather engage in the present moment. And on the other hand, if necessary, one can recognize subtle details available in the present experience. So that comes under the clear comprehension. And clear comprehension, as I mentioned, Satisampajanya, when it is mentioned as a couple or kind of a joined word, so it has broader meaning, not just being mindful, but being mindful on different areas, different activities, maintaining mindfulness in all the day. And maintaining mindfulness coupled with clear comprehension so that you are able to recognize even subtle details. Now, this is something actually we are developing, say, during the meditation as well. Now, say, for example, if you are practicing Anapanasati, so you are at the beginning simply using mindfulness on breathing just to establish mindfulness. You are trying to be aware of the in-breath, trying to be aware of the out-breath. So that is the very much what we do, sato asa sati, sato passa sati. But once mindfulness is established, so Buddha asks us to refine our mindfulness. And that is where we are trying to recognize certain other aspects, whether the breath is longer, whether it is shorter, whether it is warmer, whether it is cooler. So likewise, that helps to refine mindfulness. And another, I like to conclude by adding another point here. So the another point which Buddha encouraged is being contented. Now, it started with morality and different aspects of morality explained, and then the sense restrainment, and then clear comprehension and mindfulness. And now Buddha talks about contentment. Now, he is contented with what he has. Now this is more oriented towards a monk. So he has basically four requisites. One area is the robes. Another area is the pindapata, the food. The other one is the dwelling place. The other one is the medicine. So those are the four requisites a monk has to have. And whatever he has, so he is quite contented with what he has. not going after more luxurious or more superior parts. Rather, if he has already received a robe, so he is contented with it. If he went through village Pindapatha and got some food, either it is delicious or either it is raw, so he is contented with it. And if he is living a good hut, a kuti, or if he is having a more basic kind of kuti, he is contented. And using various medicines and say gilampasa, so he is contented. So basically this is something Buddha highlights, and he is giving a beautiful simile here, and he mentioned like a bird. Whenever he wants to go from one place to another place, he doesn't have huge baggage to carry. He simply has two wings. So just using the two wings from this place to another place, he can simply go. Very much like Buddha mentioned, so his followers has very little things, and there is nothing, there is no huge baggage to carry, and he is not therefore burdened by having too many things. So therefore Buddha mentioned here having less in a way, appichata, and again contented, that is the santuttita, being contented. Actually these have kind of a relationship. I mean, where you are maintaining morality, you are trying to maintain restrainment of faculties and trying to develop clear comprehension and mindfulness, and again well contented. Now I mean, these are kind of different approaches that Buddha explained. So how with less one can be contented? So this is somewhat going opposite towards the typical economic terms. Now typically in the lay life, we are looking forward for more and more things, accumulate things, trying to possess so much things. The opposite is there in the monk's life. So there are, the monk has to look after himself by abandoning things, having less, not accumulating things, but giving up things. So more one has in the lay life, we can consider, okay, he's a successful lay person. The less one have in the monk's life, we can say he's a successful person in the monk's life. So this is going in different directions. So therefore here, the sermon is more oriented towards monks, towards the ascetics, Brahmins, wanderers who are already renunciants. So therefore Buddha highlights here, so there one is contented with what they have. So having less still more contented. So you can see the mind is simplified, the way of life is simplified, less things to bother, less things to get burdened, less responsibilities. So therefore one can now have a kind of a peaceful mind even with these kind of practices. Now here very much the behavioral aspect is highlighted. With that behavioral aspect, Buddha mentioned, actually if one is restraining oneself, if one is trying to adhere to this kind of a lifestyle, so one can understand, okay, my life has become more simple. I have only less things to be get burdened. My life is kind of simplified. My clothing, my eating, my house, my medicine. So all things are very much like the simple things. It doesn't mean I am becoming a kind of a poor person. Rather, what is necessary is available. But not become overwhelmed by too many things. Not getting cluttered with so many things. So that is the kind of a lifestyle that Buddha is recommending. So I think for today it is enough. So basically, we have come across some aspects of Pottapada Sutta. I think fair aspect is we were able to complete today. And now we have to go to some other areas. I think we can touch those on next week. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Joining us, you may participate in the Q&A by either raising your hand, or you can also send them via the chat.
So today also actually information is more related to morality, sense restrainment, mindfulness and clear comprehension, and contentment. So So I think most of you don't have much question related to this. If there are no questions, we can wind up the session. Today our Chitra Devi seems no question. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think Kumudini is there. Yeah.
I have a question not regarding today's sermon,
yeah,
but it's regarding the elements when we contemplate them.
Right.
You want to get the understand that what element, what is outside is the same as what we are made of.
Mm-hmm.
Then now, what? How does the consciousness come into the picture?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have to consider this. In Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, so as far as I can remember now, six elements there Buddha mentioned. Four elements are the physical elements, then the space element and the consciousness element. Now,
right.
Yeah, so the four elements we are getting to know through, and even we can call even the space element, we can get into know through the elements meditation, but the consciousness very much through the Vedana Anupassana. So it's different approach Buddha is taking in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So consciousness, one aspect of consciousness or one function of consciousness is to clearly know. Now the example given is, now suppose you are tasting something, and there you can clearly recognize whether it is salty, whether it is tasty, whether it is hot, whether it is... I mean, different tastes are there. So there Buddha mentioned one function of consciousness is to clearly know. So those kinds of things. Now, so when you are seeing something, you can clearly know, okay, seeing happens. When you are hearing, okay, you can clearly know, okay, hearing happens. When tasting, you can know, okay, tasting happens. When smelling, the smelling happens. When tangibles are there, you can recognize, okay, the touching happens. And when thoughts are there, you can say, okay, cognition happens. So each and every sense base, you can be more mindful. And that whenever sense impingement happen, so you can know, okay, there is some knowing happens. So this knowing part is what we call the consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, etc. So this knowing, then and there you recognize how this knowing happens. So this knowing,
yes,
yeah.
I understand that, but my question was not quite that I'm asking, you know, we are made to get the understanding that outside and inside we are made the same. But as the outside, like say for instance, of course, inanimate things don't have a consciousness,
mm-hmm.
but animals do have some consciousness. But about plants and stuff like, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of question is what I'm asking. So it is the only you know, the hardness, the softness, all those things. Out, you know, we are supposed to understand that. We are made of the same things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But then what about consciousness?
No.
It's just something apart from it.
No, we can't say so. It is not apart from us. And what we have is something, the same thing, and the outside is also what's available, the same thing. Now say, my consciousness, how it is operating, and your consciousness, how it is operating, is very similar. Say, that is why, I mean, when we are actually... recognizing the function of consciousness using ourselves. When I see something, when I hear something, so we are applying the mindfulness to our sense faculties to understand the function of the consciousness. But when you apply that knowledge inferentially to someone else, the same thing happens there. So more and more you understand the function of your consciousness, you can inferentially understand, okay, similar thing happens with another person. Similar thing
another
happens
person.
Another person. Similar thing happens with another animal. I mean, you can't say, for example, a dog, when it sees something, so same eye consciousness happen. When it hears something, the ear consciousness happen. So the
it only applies to
animate things.
Something that has life, but
exactly.
Not to animate things.
Yes, yes. Only to the, only to living things, living beings.
Please.
Living beings, so we can say the consciousness operates similarly, and in that sense, actually, we are losing that too much distinction that we have given to ourselves. So we can understand, okay, everywhere the consciousness is there. The cognition happens everywhere, so it is not only here. It is kind of a cognition is there. Knowing is there. Yeah.
So. Plants, do they have some rudimentary consciousness?
That's difficult to answer. Actually, they do have some sensing. Different kinds of experiments have done, and they understood now, say, for example, if you are talking to a plant with soft words, more mild words, and then they react in one way, and if you are using harsh words, they react in another way. So this explains some sort of an effect is there, but we can't say they have completely a life in the sense kind of a consciousness. We can't say they have consciousness, but they have some form of sensitivity. Yeah.
What is confusing to me is when we are understanding, inanimate things, the hardness and all that, we compare those also in getting to reach the understanding of what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But those inanimate things don't have a consciousness, but we are relating to them.
But
what is the need for that?
No, thing is, now our body, we are using coupled with the mind. So we need to understand the complete system, no? So we are not merely having the consciousness. So we have some material aspect as well. So we need to know how this material component also react, how this material component also sort of relate. So in order to understand the materiality, so we need to explore the body. So then with the exploration, we understand, okay, it is not only to this body. Even to the outside, certain aspects are very common, very similar. So the distinction that we have given to this body become less and less in that with that understanding. Now, similarly, similarly to all the other aggregates. Now, say, for example, when you are practicing Vedananupassana, so you understand, okay, this body is going through various feelings. This mind is going through various feelings. And the same knowledge you can apply to outside, you can say another living being also going through various different kinds of feelings. So feelings are a kind of a common thing. So the distinction that I have given and I recognize these feelings as mine, myself, become kind of questionable in that sense. How I am referring these feelings are me, myself. Because they are impermanent, they come and go. So likewise to the perceptions, to the different kinds of formations, and to the consciousness, so they are all impermanent. Actually, it is not ajjata bahiddha is one aspect of understanding. Understanding their arising and passing away nature is another side of understanding. So, it is not only understanding that it is common. It is common. Understanding it is common is one thing, which helps to sort of overcome too much possessiveness, conceit, and that sort of thing. And on the other hand, understanding their impermanent nature, isn't it? So, the understanding the very impermanent nature is one important aspect of our practice. Because that leads to sort of completely deny an existing soul, an existing say hard core or kind of something substantial. Whether it is this body or the outside, that is nothing substantial. in this consciousness or outside, there is nothing substantial, because it's constantly arising and passing away. So that understanding, not only here, even the outside, it is empty, without anything substantial, it's another insight that one gains through the practice.
Thank you, Bhante. The last bit that you spoke about made me understand it very much more. Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Chita Devi to ask the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, just following that thing about the reflecting on the four elements.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it when we talk about the four elements, we think about the hardness and softness and smoothness and all those things, they can relate it to our own body, but also can we then take our mind, say, to a tree and say the roughness of the bark, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can be like, is that correct to think, yeah, we are like thinking, or I don't know whether we are thinking or reflecting, I think more reflecting with the roughness of ourselves, some whatever part of the body, and the roughness of the tree, the bark, they are similar. So is that also something that we can do?
Yes. So that is where the Ajata Bahidha comes to the play, where we have some practical knowledge, experiential knowledge using this very body, and that experiential knowledge is not limited to this body, but we can apply that to outside as well. So that is emphasized in Ajattancha Bahiddhacha. So that is emphasized. So you are using the internal as well as the external. And what is mentioned in the, say for example, in the Mahahatti Padopama Sutta, so Buddha highlights and the Venerable Sariputta highlights, there are now whatever the hardness we find within ourselves, within this internal body, and the what is the hardness we find outside, is just the hardness. So hardness is common. Hardness is a common characteristic. Now it is available inside, it is available outside. So it is just the hardness. So how I can say internal hardness is more superior than the external hardness? We can't argue like that. It is improper to say like that. So therefore, hardness is just hardness. Either it is in this body or either it is in the outside, it's just the hardness. So similarly, if we apply the same understanding, so when apply to feelings, okay, this internal feelings, what I experience, Just for the communication, I am using the term I. So the internal feelings that I am experiencing and the other feelings that others are experiencing are very much the same feelings. So feelings are feelings, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So when we are sticking to the four elements, we can feel the saliva when we are now. This I'm talking only when we are meditation. Then
mm-hmm.
meditating, then can we say this is the same
fluidity?
That we
exactly.
See in the water,
yes,
in the
yes.
Water,
yes, yes.
Rivers,
definitely.
Rain, that kind of thing.
Definitely, definitely.
So it's not thinking; it's reflecting. Would you say that? Because I just want to make sure I'm not thinking, but I'm actually reflecting. That would be right. No, it's reflecting, not thinking.
Now, actually, that's the thing. Now, first of all, we need to quietly, experientially know these things within ourselves. So that is not a kind of a thinking process. You can actually learn Buddha's teaching and think about it. That is also part of practice. But most important thing is the experiential knowledge, where you are developing fair amount of concentration, and with that concentration, you are able to recognize these element characteristics, how they behave. So now you have some practical knowledge, experiential knowledge. So when you have that experiential knowledge, so your mind may ask from you, isn't it the same thing available outside?
Yeah,
isn't it?
But we have to prompt the mind sometimes.
Maybe. Yeah, that I agree.
Yeah.
Yes. We might have to prompt. But anyway, it is not by looking at a book or that sort of thing. Rather, since you already have gained a fair amount of understanding by experientially sort of analyze your body, I mean, feel your body, experience your body, you understood, okay, this is the thing available inside. So then,
yeah.
Inferentially, it is fairly sort of very much like automatic that you may understand, okay, outside also is similar. So, I mean, you can think about it. No, I mean, there is no harm in thinking. Probably a certain amount of thinking is also involved. Because you can't really experience entire universe to know the physical thing. But by you become part of the whole universe, you are representing the universe in that sense. So the outside is also very much similar.
When we reflect like this, we are just like
part of the environment.
Energy here and energy there, whatever you want, whatever word you want to call it.
Yes.
So then we are trying to reduce this concept of self, which is the most important thing to lose, actually.
True. And again, always we have kind of self-centered thinking. We are always keeping this body as one unit, my thinking, my perceptions, my feelings, my body. So we have made a very small component while keeping that as a center. The whole thinking has sort of came out. So our whole way of thinking, perceptions, is very much like this self-centered. Now, using this whole practice, now this self-centeredness become diluted, become more and more irrelevant. I mean, now you become a kind of a part of the universe. You become, so this self-centeredness become less and less, you become part of the universe. I mean, you feel that, I mean, I am part of the universe. I mean, I can, even though I mean, even though this body is there, mind is there, I mean, so you feel connected with the whole universe, isn't it?
And that is what Vipassana is all about. When we say Vipassana brings about wisdom, it is all this losing the concept of self, seeing the impermanence, and just knowing that we are just a dewdrop in the on the leaves.
Yeah, we can say so. Yeah, we can say so. Yes.
So, the other thing that I just want to touch on is that, the things about the Adisila for the monks, like as lay people, I know some people who like to sleep on low beds, and I don't, but I know they do. Some people I know, and then now in order to go on this spiritual path or to attain to have any forms of positive attainments, are we expected at some stage to be doing all these things, to avoid listening to music? I mean, I listen. I'm not talking about myself, but if we have to go further, are those things that the Buddha expects us to do, or is that something that we don't really, we don't overdo, of course, now because we are in the Dhamma, we don't overdo and all the time, listening to this and that and doing that and this. I mean, we are trying to calm the mind and body and trying to reduce our activities as much as possible, but are we expected to do this, to move forwards further?
Actually, we can say yes, because thing is, now more one is sort of progressing in the path, so they may feel that, I mean, the gross sensations become sort of unbearable. Say, for example, now assume that you are used to look at so many movies and that is filled with a lot of excitement. And later you may understand, I mean, I am agitating the mind by looking at these things. So it has become kind of too much gross to the mind. I mean, I am taking too many signs. I become sort of overwhelmed by, say, emotions. So likewise, you understand how the mind being affected by these kind of gross sensations, gross satisfactions, or gross entertainment. So therefore, probably now you can replace that gross entertainment with some refined entertainment.
Yes.
So likewise, the practice become kind of going from more gross level to a refined level. You can't go immediately to a more refined level. Rather, where you are with that level, you are refining yourself to another more refined level.
Yes, yes. So I mean, your answer is, at some stage, it is to our advantage if we follow some of these things in a more disciplined manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, because we are doing, I mean, of course, we are reducing a lot of these distractions and which causes mental proliferation, but still we are living in this world.
Yes. That is acceptable. I mean, that's why, I mean, I can't say, I mean, basically, even for monks, now complete cutting off from the society is not the thing expected, isn't it?
Now,
that is why, I mean, even on the other hand, now with the spiritual life, you start to find another way of satisfaction, another way of, say, joy. It is not the joy that you may come through by enticing your senses, right? But you may come through a different sort of happiness. So that is why Buddha mentioned, when you are going through, say, spiritual practice, there is happiness available. And with that happiness, try to replace the happiness you are gaining in the mundane way of life. If you can remember the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, idam nissa idam pajahata. Now you are able to assume that you are able to understand and enjoy certain aspect of the spirituality. Time to time, suppose that your mind get purified, you are temporarily entertaining some sort of bliss, certain amount of composure is there, calmness is there, peace is there. So it's a kind of an entertainment. It's a kind of a, say, unworldly kind of entertainment. So now Buddha is advising, okay, now try to use that as a way to sort of minimize the typical mundane kind of entertainment. It's a kind of a replacement.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But you know, like nature, I mean, nature
yes.
is beautiful.
Yeah.
And it does entertain your eyes in a different way, but it gives you some kind of peace and harmony within.
Yes, definitely. That's why I mentioned, I think even during a previous occasion, that is even venerable. I mean, the arahants have appreciated. So they were well connected to the environment. They were able to connect with it and just be with it. And they have sort of healed with it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And the other thing is even music, I mean, not loud music and all this rock music. But, you have some classical music which is very harmonious to the body and mind.
Yes.
You know, Bhante?
Yes.
So those also are not causing you agitation at all. In fact, it makes you feel very peaceful and calm, you know?
Yes. So that's why I mentioned, now you can't immediately completely avoid everything. So that becomes a kind of a failure. Rather, better we take a very practical approach. At the moment, if my mind getting too much agitated with some gross music, hard music, rock music, or whatever it is, now let me slowly make it little refined. So let me switch to something more soothing. Let me see whether my mind get less agitated because of this kind of music, or whether it is calming down. As you said, I mean, whether it is calming down. So there are meditational music also available. So likewise, so that's why people are coming with various mechanisms. What are the ways which are calming down, more relaxing, So assume that you had so much of burden, so much of arguments or whatever the tensions coming through your office work or whatever it is. Now assume that you come home and listen to some calming music. It really helps. It really helps.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to actually basically do things that make us peaceful and harmonious within, because
yeah,
that's how we are going to be more aware and have clear comprehension, because otherwise you can't.
Yes.
Living in a day life.
Yes.
And also, you know, there are Buddha said not to self-mortification, so we don't have to do certain things that might cause, you know, body-mind discomfort or aversion.
Correct,
you know?
Correct. So that is why, I mean, whole teaching, whole practice is, we can say, very much like relative. At the moment,
yes,
what is the level? I mean, what is the way? How can I further refine it? How can I go a little better? I mean, not, I mean, how to make it less agitated at least.
Yeah. With no self-mortification. Because
definitely.
When we are 25 years old, we can sleep on the floor or whatever it is.
Yes, yes.
But as you get older, you know, your body, you have back problems and all that, so you can't then you can't self-mortify, because
mm-hmm,
you think you're doing something to, but actually you have to go back to basics, the body, mind. Are we, you know, making the body mind peaceful and harmonious?
Definitely, yeah. That's why, I mean, basically, so looking after the body is expected.
Yeah, because if it is very, very hot, of course there's nothing wrong putting the fan, because, I mean, you can sleep better and then you have, your body mind is peaceful.
Yeah.
Would that not be right? I mean, that's why it's there. It's not that we are over-indulging, but we are not self-mortifying ourselves. Would that be right?
Yeah, I can say so. Yes, can agree.
Yes.
So you got some permission somehow, right?
No, I strongly believe in, I feel that that we must self-mortify, because some people don't know the boundaries, especially like once I went for this retreat, and these people didn't want to put the fan, and I mean it was hot as ever, and we were going to be more comfortable if we were going to have the fan, but so one has to understand the limits, the boundaries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are not over indulging. We are not, giving luxurious things. These are,
yes,
these are things that help the body mind to relax.
Correct.
It's
so
like
basically,
going to the jungle.
Yeah. So basically, that's why, I mean, what you call asevana cha balanam panditanam cha sevana puja cha, no, what is that, in the mangala karana, in the mangala sutta, that Buddha mentioned that living in an appropriate place, so more conducive environment. That's why, I mean, sometimes Buddha asks, when monks are coming to meet him, Buddha asking, I mean, whether are you satisfied, are you getting enough food, are you well supported? Because these things are quite necessary. I mean, it is, you can't completely forget about the sustenance of the body and fully dedicate yourself for the practice. Basically, you need to find out the balance. So how, now it is very much like using a vehicle. So if you are looking after the vehicle, if you are maintaining the vehicle properly, then you can use it for a long time.
Absolutely. And so some of these things that is being put down, as lay people, we have to look at it from another angle as well, because lots of the time the monks who these are young monks anyway, who can do all these things, for us as lay people, some of these things we can do, some of these things we have to look at it and say, is that conducive? Because
that's the thing. So that's why, I mean, that is where we need to find out through Vinaya. Now, if it comes to the monks, Vinaya, so what is the limit? So where am I going to overindulge, or where am I going to do some sort of self-mortification? So both are extremes. So if I am going for kind of indulgence, that is one extreme. So then I am forgetting about everything and I am just spending more time in sleeping, spending more time in luxurious things and listening to music and all sort of different types of things. So that is the indulgence. On the other hand, if I am doing some sort of self mortification, then that is the other extreme.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
And that is what the Buddha did it himself. No, Bhante, starved himself and did all kinds of terrible things which he thought was the correct thing, and he realized that that was not what it was.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, so we all have as lay people also to understand that, of course, not to overindulge because that is also makes us agitated and also proliferate the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should have the middle path, as the Buddha said. Is that right,
Bhante? Correct,
yes.
Correct. Yes, yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
So interesting. By the way, I mean, we are exploring the path, that is what necessary, because it is not kind of a blind following of the thing. Rather, we need to recognize what is appropriate and what is inappropriate. So that is why even in the suttas, Buddha mentioned Vedana, the feelings are two types, twofold, which are some groups we have to abandon, some we have to maintain. Sevitabbampi, asevitabbampi. So if we understand, okay, if our wholesomeness is developing and the unwholesomeness is reducing by associating certain group of Vedana feelings, then Buddha say, okay, you just associate that feeling. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned, if my wholesomeness, the wholesome qualities are reducing and the unwholesome qualities are increasing, when I am associating certain group of feelings, then you better abandon that. So we need to decide based on the qualities that we are developing. Whenever we are associating certain type of feelings, if the wholesome qualities are developing, if it is helping me to develop my concentration, if it is helping me to develop wisdom, to mindfulness, so then that associating such feelings are acceptable. And on the other hand, if I very well understand that when I am associating this group of feelings, my mind get agitated, I am losing my concentration, I am losing my mindfulness, rather than become wise, I become more sort of deluded, then those kinds of feelings we should not associate. Okay, I think we have spent fair amount of time in discussing. If you don't have any other question, probably we can wind up the session.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so today also we were able to spend about 1.5 hours discussing Buddha's teaching and listening to some Dhamma. With that, we were able to accumulate some merits, and we'll share these merits with all the past level relatives, all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. We wish ourselves also to help these merits to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු